Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
Bove, do you do the laundry at your house, or does your wife do it? Do you split duties?
My wife does more of the laundry than I do. I'll do some stuff here and there, like I know how to do laundry, and I'll do most of my own laundry, but she usually does some of our laundry together, her laundry, and our daughter's, so she does more of it.
I generally do the laundry at our house.
Okay.
And especially folding, like my wife doesn't love to fold, but I do the laundry. I fold it kind of, I don't love it, but also it's kind of a little relaxing. I get stuff done in my head. Here's the reason I'm telling you, you can't see this on the video, but right before I left to come down here today, I was doing a little laundry and I think I got detergent on my shirt. And now I got a couple little stains on my shirt.
Yeah.
And like, I'm very self-conscious of this right now.
Uh-huh.
And it's not a big deal, but I'm like, I think it's laundry on my shirt. If you're watching on the video screen, there you go.
I'm going to tell all the players to say something about Sal's shirt and be like, hey, did you get detergent on your shirt? Like, what an amateur.
I know, right? Liquid detergent. So I think that's what happened. I'm like, God, I'm so self-conscious. I'm thinking about it. I'm like, we're going to be on video. We're doing this. And it's always game day in Buffalo. But you know what? We can't see it because we have a great producer there who makes sure that we have a great shot. And that is Mike Robbie. And of course, it is beautiful. Look at that. It's incredible, right? With that new stadium. In case you haven't seen anything lately, the panels are going up on the far side over there. It's pretty awesome. We are here outside One Bills Drive and outside the field house. And the reason is it is like 80 degrees out here. Yeah. It is going to be a gorgeous, gorgeous Thursday night game inside Highmark Stadium. By the way, probably looks like the last game ever after 53 years of this particular rivalry inside this stadium.
Yeah, I was doing a little bit of the research ahead of it. There was some interesting little nuggets. Do you know how many in a row the Bills have won against the Dolphins?
I know it's 12 of 13. So I'm going to say, 13. Ooh, thank you. The only one they lost in that time period was Rex in 2016 when they went to overtime and they didn't have enough guys on the field. So 17 through 24 would be what, 8 in a row?
They lost one in 2022 in Miami, the game when Josh skipped it.
I thought you meant here.
McKenzie. Yeah, they've won 9 in a row in Orchard Park going back to 2016 when they lost in overtime in that game. But yeah, 9 in a row. Josh Allen has never lost to the Dolphins inside this building. I know quarterback's not a win stat. I get that. People are rolling their eyes. I'm just saying, in his tenure and in Sean McDermott's tenure, they have never lost to the Dolphins here. You talk about how nice the weather is going to be. I don't necessarily think that's an advantage. I think if you've got the Dolphins coming to town, you want it to be miserable weather here, because that's when they seem to crumble every single year, is when it gets a little bit cold. You know, I remember those shirts. I wish it were colder. No, you don't. Stop lying. They don't wish it was colder. They wish it was like this every single week.
I don't think this year should matter too much if the Bills do what they're supposed to do. They should take care of business against this team, which is reeling right now. Look, it is a division game. Anything can happen. I thought you were referencing just inside this stadium. The last time the Bills lost to the Dolphins was the year before Sean McDermott, 2016. Rex Ryan was the coach. But before that, the Bills had beaten the Dolphins quite a few times in a row as well. I mean, the Bills have a pretty long streak. I think it's 12 of the last 13 years inside Highmark Stadium. Bills and Dolphins. All right, let's get right to the news of the day. Very, very interesting and I think encouraging from my standpoint news on Matt Milano. Sean McDermott basically said he could practice tomorrow, meaning Wednesday, which means he's not ruled out for Thursday.
Yeah, I think that's a great news. I'm not anticipating that we see him on Thursday. I feel like when you're talking about a player who would miss 2 days in a row of practice any given week, I wouldn't like their outlook. To me, that's positive because it doesn't feel like it's going to be a super long-term injury. Now, Sean McDermott was specifically asked, because you are saying there's a chance he practices on, what is tomorrow, Wednesday? Wednesday. Will you rule out the fact that it's not long-term? He said no. So he's not ruling it out, but the fact that he even hinted to us that he could practice tomorrow makes it seem like it is a very promising prognosis for a player who's definitely important to what they do on defense.
Yeah, the way I read this is, hey, everything looks pretty good right now, but we got to make sure. And we're not going to put him out there if there's any risk of injury. But at the same time, let's go through the rest of the testing just to kind of see how it responds to make sure it's not a long-term injury. And the biggest thing for me is simply Sean McDermott himself. Sean is very careful about how he talks about these things. Matt, for him to even open the door for Matt Milano practicing Wednesday really means a lot to me.
Yeah, let me just say this too, and once again, I'm assuming here, I don't think Milano will play in this game, but because Taron Johnson and Shaq Thompson have been limited on back-to-back days, I think they're probably trending in the right direction. I honestly feel like they were probably trending in the right direction before the Jets game, but the Bills were like, you know what? Let's be a little bit overcautious here, knowing we've got a short week coming up. So in my head, I'm kind of mentally preparing. Milano comes out, Taron Johnson and Shaq Thompson go in. And oh, by the way, I think Jordan Hancock's also got a chance to probably make his NFL debut this weekend as well, or excuse me, this Thursday as well. So yeah, I think overall, good injury news. The only one we're still waiting on is Ed Oliver. But given the fact that they didn't put him on IR before the Jets game, it feels like probably misses this game, maybe one more. But then after that, like, you know, with a 10-day break coming up between the Jets game or the Dolphins game and the Saints game, maybe he plays back and maybe he's back for that game.
Bills are home for all three of their next three games. They have the Dolphins Thursday night, Saints on a Sunday afternoon, and then Patriots on a Sunday night. That's the rivalry uniform game that the Bills are going to wear on Sunday night, October 5th. Yeah, I want to talk about what's behind these guys if they don't play, like Matt Milano specifically. First of all, let me say, in the game on Sunday, there were a lot of speculation about when Matt got hurt. We don't know. There seems to be maybe the play where he stumbled on Justin Fields' run. That looks like it. But Matt, he played after that. I watched
the next play.
And he played until the end of the half. He just didn't come out at the end of the half. So that's another thing that's a bit encouraging for me, which is, you know what? They went to the locker room. He's like, hey, something doesn't feel right. It wasn't like he got injured per se on a play, it felt like.
Yeah, it felt like that's one of the reasons. I think from the time it happened, the prognosis from both of us, while we didn't know the details, the signs didn't make it seem like it was going to be a super significant injury. And admittedly, too, like, you shouldn't bank on this. But a lot of times with these big injuries, big injuries get reported by the big-time insiders, and none of that has happened with Matt Milano. Like, how many times? Think about the Joe Burrow stuff. Now, obviously, I'm not comparing Matt Milano to Joe Burrow, but the Joe Burrow news dropped the minute the next day started of, like, hey, he's going to miss substantial amount of time. And we even saw that with the Bucs. They had a player who got in.
Clancy.
Yeah.
I was just about to find that.
I was going to say, like, they haven't gone back to the facility yet, but that's out there that he is going to miss the rest of the season. So with me, I think given the injury history of Milano, there's no reason to rush him. And if that means he has to miss a game against the Dolphins, then so be it. But that's okay. You just need him ready to go for this stretch after these next couple games and obviously into the playoffs and all of that kind of stuff. I feel that way about a lot of the guys on their defense, honestly.
How are you with Dorian Williams after what you saw last year and him backing up Matt Milano? And if Matt Milano is lost for a couple of weeks, regardless of opponent, and the Bills should take care of these teams, just simply Dorian Williams playing will linebacker.
I like Dorian Williams. I think Dorian Williams has probably earned a bigger role on this team, but he hasn't had a chance to kind of secure it because of the players who were in front of him, which is Matt Milano. And when Matt Milano came back last year, I think they wanted to shake off a bit of the rust to get him into the playoffs. And then when he got into the playoffs, it felt like every single week he started to play a little bit better. I trust Dorian Williams in this. Like, I don't think losing Milano potentially this week is as big as not having Ed Oliver last week. Like, I really don't, even though I'm anticipating that both of those guys probably miss. I felt like taking Oliver out of their lineup defensively is a much bigger loss, at least in the short term, than Milano, because I just trust Dorian Williams more than I trust some of the other guys on the defensive line behind Ed Oliver, just because of lack of experience. Dorian Williams has been in the league and played a lot of games because of all of the Milano injuries.
Yeah, and on top of that, you have Shaq Thompson, who I think really looked good in preseason and training camp until he had an injury here. He can play all three linebacker positions. The Bills generally only use two, but he can play all three. He's right there as well. All right, let's get to Jordan Hancock, because here's a young man, as you said, might make his NFL debut. Now, he had really only exclusively been playing safety for most of training camp and preseason. With the injury to Taron, with Cam Lewis even a little bit banged up, I do wonder if they train him back at nickel corner, but I would expect him to kind of be a depth safety. Who knows if he even gets a game day jersey, but I think he becomes more of a depth safety and special teams player.
Yeah, I think so too. And I just think because of the injuries that you talked about with Taron Johnson and Cam Lewis, not knowing what their status is, they're both limited. They've been limited for 2 days in a row. That's usually a good sign. Not knowing what their status is, though, I think there's got to be a way that you get Jordan Hancock onto the active, you know, like 48 guys that are playing on Thursday night. I don't know who would ultimately come out. Maybe that's Jamarcus Ingram. Maybe he's the guy that comes out for Jordan Hancock to come in, just because it feels like Hancock would be one of the primary backups at nickel cornerback, but also one of the primary backups at safety. Although that being said,
would it be maybe DeMar?
That's what I was going to just say. I was going to say, I don't know if you'd do Jamarcus, because then you would be a little bit thin at boundary corner. Yeah. And I feel like you would rather go too deep there. So then maybe, you are talking about, I mean, who else would it be?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're not
gonna- Well, Sam Franklin, but he's not going to come off the field. He's a safety.
No, Sam Franklin. I mean, I was listening to your conversation with Eric Turner a little bit ago, and he's been awesome. Like, he has made so many special teams plays. So think of him as a guy who's going to be playing in all of these games, and it has nothing to do with his ability to play safety. It's everything to do with what he brings on the special teams element of the game.
Let me just look. I'm going to pull up the roster that we have right now to make sure that we're covering all our bases here. Obviously, Hancock. So that's it. I mean, really, you only have Rapp, Bishop, Hancock is your, because Cam Lewis is really your other backup safety. But then if he has to play it all for nickel, I think you're right there. Maybe you have to keep all those guys active, and then maybe Jamarcus comes into play. Would Dorian Strong ever come into play? Probably not, because the way he played and the fact that he can play boundary corner right there. Could be, look at linebacker. I don't think so. Maybe Joe Andreessen, if you think Shaq Thompson's healthy. It's a good problem to have, as they say. All right.
Let me ask you this, though, because we're looking at this roster. When do we see Landon Jackson?
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
I think if everybody stays healthy at edge, all year, not all year.
Really? A third round pick who is not playing. Like, I think back to the conversations we have in the offseason about the misses and how the Bills are perceived and if they're better drafting or worse drafting some of the other teams. Like, that's unacceptable.
Is that a miss, though? Who's he supposed to play over? Because you could say the same thing. If he's playing over Javon Solomon, who was just drafted last year in his second year, you could say that's a miss.
Yeah, but Javon Solomon was a fifth-round pick, and Landon Jackson was a third-round pick, right? I would imagine that you need to be getting more contributions out of it. Not I would imagine. You should.
A year later, though. I mean, he's still young.
Yeah, but I mean, like, let's talk about, I don't remember off the top of my head, but we've talked about our concerns with the safety positions, and it feels like the Jets game was a step in the right direction. But look at some of the safeties in the NFL that are going out there and making plays, like Xavier Watts and Billy Bowman and some of these guys that were day two picks. I don't remember who was taken first out of any of those players, but those are guys who would be helping you right
okay,
now.
Okay, so I think the conversation then goes to, for me, and I give space to it, but I would say it this way. Is Landon Jackson the miss, or the fact that maybe you shouldn't have drafted a defensive end there?
I don't want to put it all on Landon Jackson because it's hard to be critical of somebody who hasn't even had an opportunity to prove themselves. But I felt like the opportunity to prove yourself was in the summer. And if he hasn't been able to do that to this point, it feels like it's a missed opportunity because a third round pick should be contributing.
So then again, I'll ask, who's he playing over? And who would you take out? Unless you want five defensive ends active. And by the way, Michael Hoyt's going to come back.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying it's a disappointment that he's not winning a rep over or a job over Javon Solomon. And understanding, I like Javon Solomon. I like the pass rushing component. I also understand the special teams component to Javon Solomon. But then that's a bean conversation. It's like, why did you do that? I mean, if he was that high on your board, shouldn't you be finding a way to get him onto the team, get him onto the active roster?
I'd look at it different. I think this is what you have backups for, is what you have a roster for. If guys get dinged up, you can play them. They develop. Guys are developing, right? I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah,
Javon Solomon's a nice player for you. They kicked him inside. He contributed last week. That's what you want. He's a second-year player. I think if you have that philosophy, then you have no depth at all. I mean, you get 53 players. He's on the roster.
Yeah, no, I get he's on the roster, but what if he doesn't play at all this season, and we're having this exact same conversation last year, and you go, well, there's going to be some learning curves. I mean, it's the same thing we've talked about with Cole Bishop, right?
If you ask me, what if he doesn't play this all season? I say, well, then next year he has another chance to crack it because now AJ Epenesa is no longer on the team because he's a free agent. Joey Bosa, we'll see what happens with him. Sure. This is why you do it.
No, I'm not like crucifying them or anything like that. I just think that you should be getting production out of a third round pick, and I understand why he is inactive right now. Like, I get why they're going in another direction, that Javon Solomon brings them a bit more pass rush juice, also as a more special teams contributor, like, right now. But I just feel like
I'd like to see it too, but at what cost if you're taking someone off? So again, I'll go back to, I think then what your point is, maybe they shouldn't have drafted a defensive end.
That would be my point. Yeah, I mean, or if you did, you would like to see that person be someone you can't keep off of your roster on Thursdays or Sundays, in this case, Thursdays or Sundays, just because it feels like there were probably other positions that you could have addressed where that guy would have definitely been on the team and been playing. I mean, he's on the team. I don't want to make it seem like he's not on the team. He's on the team. He just hasn't been active for a game yet. It is only a couple weeks. Maybe this is something that changes. Maybe at some point he flip-flops. Maybe if they get an injury, then obviously he would be the next man up. It just doesn't feel like we're trending in that direction at all. Like, we're talking about some of the other guys. Like, we're talking about Jordan Hancock as almost a foregone conclusion that he's probably going to be active on Thursday night, and I don't think either of us think that Landon Jackson will be. And he was two rounds ahead of Jordan Hancock.
I don't know most, like, I can't look at every single team's depth chart and know it off the top of my head. If Landon Jackson is on, I don't know, 16 other teams, how many is he playing? I think that's where the conversation goes to me. See, I think that's just so funny. Somebody commented the other day to me that you're the product of being a drought era guy, right? Like, okay. right. And it's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I look at it as a strength. They have such a good roster. It's tough for a third round pick to crack it. So you know what? Develop them. And maybe next year you look at it as, well, then why the hell is he on the team? Or did you draft him? I think we just look at it a lot different. I look at it as a strength. It's a tough roster to crack.
It's a tough roster to crack unless you're a fourth round pick or a fifth round pick or a sixth round pick. And some of the other guys who are playing in front of him, who were drafted later than him. So I guess that goes more to the position thing. But given the fact that Hoyt is suspended, when he comes back, he's going to be active. And then I think at that point, Javon Solomon's probably not active, assuming everybody's healthy. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder, what is the path, unless there's an injury, to a player like Landon Jackson?
I don't know if there is a path. I'm wondering, people have asked, what happens when Hoyt comes back? You have to make a roster spot. Now, injuries generally play a point in that. We are also 2 weeks away from Tyler Bass being eligible to return, which is becoming a conversation, but I've kind of tabled that for a while and I still want to table it, but at some point it's going to become a conversation.
He should not come back unless Matt Prater misses a kick. Until he screws up, and it's not even a screw up, right? If you miss a kick, you miss a kick here and there, whatever. Like, Matt Prater has been good for them. He's made all the kicks you've asked him to make. He made a long one against the Jets. He made the game winner on week one against the Ravens. Like, he's done nothing to not warrant a spot on this team. I felt more comfortable with Matt Prater walking out onto the fields to kick that game-winning field goal against the Ravens than I would have with Tyler Bass. Understanding Tyler Bass has also had that success in you know, made that kick before. I just felt like, okay, this guy, he's been in the league forever. He's been in the league forever because he's consistent and he's good. And I think there's value there. The thing that you're missing is your field goal range probably isn't as far, right? Tyler Bass,
I mean,
61-yarder against the Dolphins to win last year.
I would normally agree, but this is a guy. Matt Prater has more 50-yard-plus field goals than anybody in NFL history.
Yeah, but look,
he's a little older, too, though.
But look at some of the kicks, though, that you see around the league of, like, Brandon Aubrey making these kicks that are longer than 60 yards. Bass last year making a kick inside the stadium to beat
Bass
the Dolphins.
Has a stronger leg, I think.
Bass has a stronger leg. He's younger. That makes sense that he would have a stronger leg. But I feel like on those kicks where you need to make them, Prater has not missed that. And it just felt like... We're also coming off of a summer where Bass was injured for most of the summer. I think we were all wondering, like, how is he going to respond? Because he was better last year than he was 2 years ago, but he still wasn't perfect by any stretch.
So the Bills take on the Dolphins Thursday night at Highmark Stadium, not the new one behind us, but the current one that's sitting just over there to our left right now. It's always game day in Buffalo. Thanks a lot for watching, subscribing at Sal Sports on YouTube. You can always watch. And of course, you can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you pod. Let's talk about the Dolphins for a minute. This is a team that's 0-2. Their backs are against the wall. It's a divisional matchup. They're going to throw everything they have at the Buffalo Bills. If it goes really badly for them, we could be looking at a coaching change, although people in Miami I've talked to say they still think it's a bit too early for that. But at the same time, Matt, they're going to do everything they can to salvage their season right here and now.
Yeah, they need to. I talked to a couple of the guys in the locker room on Monday about this same exact notion. And I'm like, listen, I know that you need to focus on yourselves and whatever. But the fact that the Dolphins are 0-2, they're going to be playing with some desperation. And AJ Epenesa was like, listen, they're playing for their season. They know that they need to win. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. And then I thought Spencer Brown was interesting. He was like, they're probably going to try some gimmicky stuff. They're probably going to blitz more because that's what teams do when they need a spark and when they need to try and get a win. And he's like, we have to be prepared for that and we need to be cognizant of that. And I think that's a direct result of how desperate they will be playing. Because I think for a lot of them, like, they know, like, if you start 0-3, you're done. You're done. If you start 1-2 with a head-to-head win against the Bills, like, you're very much alive, especially in a little bit of a dwindling AFC right now. Bills got to win this game. You know, they're a huge favorite, which is a tad concerning, but at the same time, like, there's a reason. It's a tad concerning to me because, like, the Bills are really good and the Dolphins have struggled. But are the Dolphins that bad? Are the Dolphins really worse than the Jets that we just watched? Because they are twice as big of a favorite against the Dolphins as they were against the Jets. And that Jets team stunk.
And that's a product of Miami's last performance as well, their first two performances. I think they have, I don't know, I would say more talent, but do they have more talent? I didn't think the Dolphins would be very good coming into the year. But man, I think Tua is a pretty good quarterback that if you protect him, he has weapons, he can get him to. I think that's the issue, though. They can't protect him. Mm-hmm. He's not mobile, and right now it's going very poorly for him and them.
Yeah, if I was Miami, I would just feed Achan this game. Like, he's good. The problem is sometimes there are some injury concerns. His durability becomes a question. That's why, to me, having Taron Johnson available for this game would be a big deal because, like, I understand you're giving up a bit of size when you have Taron on the field, but I think with a player that shifty, you probably want somebody like Taron Johnson available because I feel good about Taron Johnson, you know, bringing down a player the size of Devon Achane. He's a really good player. He's a game changer with the ball in his hands. It feels like they don't give him the ball enough. Like, I would be concerned about him breaking off a couple big plays more than I would be going against Breece Hall just because he's a different type of player. Like, I think that they should be doing everything they can to feed the ball there. And maybe they will now that they are playing desperate.
Just taking a look right now. Let's go to the Miami Dolphins by game. Let's just see by their game stats. Just I have to pull down the drop-down menu, folks. Bear with me for 1 second because they have not run the ball well, but I want to make sure I get their correct stats here. Okay. Total net yards, 211, then 358. Rushing yards, 78 and 61 in two games. 78 and 61 for this team.
Yeah, it's crazy. When you just think about what the Bills get from James Cook and then what they also get from Josh Allen. I mean, in the first game, what was it, 70?
Now, they did have 6.5 a play in the first game because they had to throw the ball mostly. That's why they're behind. No, that's right.
Yeah, they were behind the whole game. And they're going to have some success. And they might hit a deep shot or two. Like, that's realistic. But their offensive line, which is missing a couple starters, needs to hold up. If the Bills get to Tua the same way the Patriots got to Tua the other day, the Bills' offense is more dynamic. And that is how this game gets out of hand. If the Bills get ahead and you force the Dolphins to throw, they're trying to play catch up, and Tua just doesn't have any time. Like, he gets the ball out of his fast the ball out of his hand so unbelievably fast. And for him to still be getting sacked as often as he did is pretty telling of all of the weaknesses on their offensive line. But that might not even be the weakest part of their roster right now. The weakest part of their roster might be their secondary with the injuries that they have and just really the lack of talent they have at corner. Like, this should be a field day for Josh Allen and the offense if they want to try and spread the ball around.
All right, last thing for you, because we got to get over to practice here. On your network last night, two Monday Night Football games, basically, ABC, ESPN, a 7 and a 10. We don't really see that. We talk to Mike North every year. He said they're going to start to kind of do different things to see what works. Did you like that last night?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought the first game was fun. I mean, the defenses in that first game were just absolutely dominating. And once again, just like offensive line play that was very, very questionable. That game made me once again realize, not that I don't realize it, but how athletic and sneaky Josh Allen is. Like, how many times did CJ Stroud or Baker Mayfield kind of roll out and get caught from somebody from behind? It feels like Josh always breaks those off. I liked it. I mean, once again, though, it kind of falls in the favor of the Bills. The second game, I think we expected the Chargers to beat the Raiders, but I mean, my goodness, Houston 0-2, like, that's another team that you thought was going to be contending for one of the top spots. Now they're 0-2, so they got to really battle their way back into this thing. So yeah, I think another kind of good favorable results for the Bills.
Chargers now 2-0, they're atop the AFC West, and of course the Kansas City Chiefs 0-2. Number one seed right now in the AFC would be the Indianapolis Colts. The Bills are the 3-seed, but hey, a lot of football to be played. We thank you for watching us here. We'll have a lot more at @Matt_Bove at Sal Sports Game Thursday night. Thanks a lot to our producer, Mike Robbier. Thanks a lot for coming aboard here to It's Always Game Day in Buffalo.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.